Live and local. Mornings with Todd Sargent. For our sponsor, Harvey Norman Computers, Rutherford and Bennett's Green.
And the name Michael Veitch might conjure up memories of, probably for me, when it comes to some of the amazing TV work of the gay airline steward, right alongside Steve Izard, Fast Forward and Full Frontal. But what you may not know about this gentleman, and he's an avid writer and put out some fabulous, fabulous books, especially focusing around Australian World War II history. Michael Veitch, the new book is called 44 Days. Good morning. What an amazing page turner.
Thank you very much, Todd. You can be my publicist.
Look, I haven't...
With that rap, I'm looking for one. You've got the job, mate. That was easy, wasn't it?
It's good. My people will talk to your people. First question I've got to ask you, it's when I first picked up Flak, which was a book about pilots, and one of the great things you did in that book, we'll move on to 44 Days, you focused on different parts of the aircraft. I looked at the name and I thought, is that the Michael Veitch and I had to have a look. It was a total turnaround for me. Where is your passion and your interest in World War II, especially aviation history? Where did that come from?
Oh, you know, it's a funny one because it doesn't really come from anything that I can directly place. I didn't have any... my dad was too young for the war. I had an uncle who was in the Navy, but I didn't really know him. A grandfather. It really just came from being a kind of a bit of an only child. I wasn't an only child, but I've got much older siblings. I used to make model airplanes all the time to keep myself occupied as a kid, and from there it was the stories. When I was growing up, it was easy to talk to World War II veterans to get the stories of what they did in these aircraft, and I used to really enjoy doing that. So really all my books, because this is the sixth book I've written about the aviation of the Second World War, it's really the stories and the heritage of what these amazing men of this extraordinary generation actually did. I just always found it a labour of love, Todd, to be honest. I just love doing it.
And the challenge is that so many of the men who've returned from World War II and all theatres of conflict, one, either didn't want to talk about it, and the challenge is you just want to know. It's not for any macabre reason, but you just want to know what happened so you can feel the emotion that they must have gone through.
I've had a stage show that's actually touring the country. We'll be touring the country again next year, called Flak. I think we're actually coming to Newcastle too, so I'll let you about it when the time comes, which is a stage version of me actually representing a few of these fellows that I met, telling their stories on stage. And after the show, every time I get, you know, half a dozen people at least coming up and saying, my father was in the Second World War, I never spoke to him about it, I wish I had. And often it's very moving for them because they realise time has kind of passed, because that generation really is going now, there's hardly any left. But so much I found of what they'd done, they hadn't spoken to anyone. There were several times during the books of interviews over the book Flak that you just mentioned, and also Fly and then Heroes of the Skies, where I had realised I was talking to these fellows who were telling stories from their youth during the war that they'd never told to anyone. So it was kind of something of a responsibility, really. You're absolutely right. They were amazing people and so modest, so incredibly. They didn't think anybody was interested in what they'd done.
That's crazy,
and often often it was very traumatic for them too, so that was the reason. But often in later life, they finally started to reveal more.
Why 44 Days is very close to me is because I had two grandfathers in the war. One was English. He was in a tank buster regiment taking on Rommel's Africa Corps. And my other grandfather was in Papua New Guinea in the Air Force. And I'm sitting here. These are stories that I'd never heard because my grandfather died when I was very, very young. And I'm reading the book, and there must be so many stories that deserve to be told that never have, because I had no idea of it. In a nutshell, can you tell us very quickly what 44 Days is about?
Sure, mate. This is a six-week period at the very beginning of the Pacific War when the Japanese had sort of swept all before them after Pearl Harbor, and in the first few months of 1942, they were pushing towards Port Moresby. It's before the great battle of Kokoda, on the Kokoda Track. This is in sort of March, April, May 1942, when air attacks were starting to happen on Port Moresby, and we had nothing, literally nothing in the air to defend it. So we quickly scratched together one squadron, single squadron of Kitty Hawk fighters that had just landed in our lap because the Americans had intended these planes for the Dutch, but the Dutch had capitulated very quickly in Borneo. And so they landed in Sydney, and they were bolted together at Bankstown Airport, these planes, that the Kitty Hawk fighters. And so the Air Force said, right, well, who's next on the training list for pilots? They're going straight up to try and defend Moresby. So for six weeks, it was simply this one squadron, 75 squadron, holding off as best they could the might of the cream of the Japanese Air Force. And it's really one of the great David and Goliath struggles, because these Japanese airmen were the best in the world. They were battle-hardened, they were highly trained. Our fellas were like, there was a carpet salesman from Melbourne.
Are you a radio announcer?
Yes, indeed. Was it Jack Pettit who was a... He was like the kind of dog's body boy at 2UE. There was an accountant from Launceston. There was a guy from Brisbane. Then they were barely trained boys who'd never flown in combat, had only got to grips with actually, you know, doing circums and bumps on their airplanes, let alone firing them in combat. And they were set up to this absolutely ghastly airstrip outside Port Moresby. There were no facilities, appalling food, no buildings. They had to sleep in under canvas. They were all sick from gastroenteritis. But day after day, the Japanese came over from over the hump of the Owen Stanley Ranges and blasted as best they could the Jesus out of Port Moresby and the airstrip. And these were the only fellas going up day after day to defend the place. And for 6 weeks, we really held our own. It was the first, really in the war, it was the first time the Japanese had felt any resistance to their plans. And they were quite stunned by it, because they didn't think it was going to be like that. They said, oh, hang on, we thought we were the best in the world. It's not going to be a walkover. But these fabulous group of Aussie airmen just went up day after day and tried to clobber the hell out of them. You know, it's not all a kind of, you know, we were, in many ways, that squadron was very badly led by the top brass, who kind of buggered everything up, as you'll read when you get to the end of the book. Hardly any decorations were given to them. They weren't really recognised for what they'd done. So, as you said, Todd, the secret of this 6 week period was just sort of kept silent. By the time I came to write, to put the book together, all the airmen had died, that they'd passed on. But I discovered that they'd left this fabulous legacy of voice recording interviews in the bowels of the Australian War Memorial. So I was able to access them, and that it's like they came alive for me. And I just wish even one of the main players of that period was alive still. But look, I was stunned. The more I went into the story, I just couldn't believe that it had happened. And particularly the aftermath, where it was just, oh, well, you know, you did your job, you don't deserve any recognition for it. I think so. God, if we were Yanks, if we were Americans, it would be the sort of story that would be on our stamps or would be
on the eulogising
in the big screen, on sporting days. We'd have songs about them. We'd, you know, we'd have Old Glory behind us with the tear in the eye. But we're not. We're much more lackadaisical than that. But so it really, there are stories that have never been told before. This is one particular story that's never been told before. And it was a huge privilege to put it together. I tried to make it very readable. You don't have to know much about aviation or the Second World War to read the story, because I really do write for people who don't necessarily have much of a background of the information.
Michael, it's amazing, and it's one of those stories, and it leaves you wondering how many other stories are there that are yet to be told, and I'm sure you're going to hunt them down. Thanks for your time this morning. As I said, it's great, and they're our boys. It's a story that deserves to be told, and thank you very much.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate the time.
And hopefully we'll see you in Newcastle with your stage show. If you get a chance to have a look at the book, Flak, there's so many different chapter on a different pilot or an aviator, and Bud Ting will actually get to mention in one of the chapters as well. If you would like to win a copy of this book, all you've got to do is head to 2NURFM.com, head to the morning page, click on Todd's Book Club, and get your name in. You never know, you've got a couple of copies to give away.
2NURFM 103.7.